Blog Talk Radio.
College basketball fans, the College Ball Show is back. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything that is college basketball. We are actually having a conversation quickly about a complete random different situation. It's kind of funny how we got on that topic real quick, and then, oh, by the way, we got to start a show, so let's not talk about something that we both want to talk about. Anyway, it's kind of funny how that was. So obviously, we're back, right? We did two shows last week because there was so much to talk about. We found ourselves last Tuesday sitting there staring at the Saturday schedule going, man, that deserves some time to talk about. I think we should maybe hold off on it. So we did a show on Friday, and another great Saturday. And when you look at the schedule this coming Saturday, you know, there's only a couple of games this week that actually kind of stand out. There's a couple of games. I mean, there's a game tonight that's a fairly big game in the Big 12. Obviously, at this time of the year, every game is big. Potentially, right? I mean, no matter who you're playing, and we've been proving that over and over this season. However, the Big East, I'm not going to say gets decided, but it definitely goes a long way to getting decided, and also at a national level for Xavier and Villanova, where they're going to fit into the number one and number two seeds out there. That's a big game, but kind of a mild, I would say a mild week, but if you look at this Saturday, it's just like, man, these Saturdays have just produced, and produced, and I believe we'll have another fun Saturday to talk about a little later in the show. There's a variety of topics that we're going to touch upon like we do every week. Of course, we're going to start the show with some recap from the last 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Lots to talk about. You know, last Saturday, Marshall, just another example of how competitive, how fun, even if this year is, but even if there's a surprise in a ranked against ranked, kind of like your North Carolina Tar Heels, who just came out and completely flattened Miami, whether it's a surprise that way or an upset this way or Texas A&M at home showing some fortitude, you know, finally saying, hey, we got to stop this streak. For God's sake, we're still in this thing. Our seeding overall for the tournament, we can still improve all this stuff. They get it done in overtime. Just a variety of games to talk about just from Saturday, Marshall. And, you know, we obviously, I think we should start with your squad. Because, you know, they ran into a little bit of a rough patch of late. Maybe they hadn't played up to their potential. They sure played pretty good on Saturday against Miami in a big, big spot.
That Carolina version is a team that can win the national title, Chris. I know we have our flaws, but as we found out this year, every team has their flaws. I don't think there truly is a runaway champ. In Vegas, certain teams are favored, but I think it is kind of a crapshoot. And that version of Carolina was, you know, Biggs cleaning up the boards. Bryce Johnson continues to have a very nice year, and I think actually Bryce Johnson has a chance to be ACC Player of the Year. At least he's in the running for having a great season. So he had a very good week. Literally, he had a good game against Duke and good game against Miami. And the team just played very well. You know, on our last show, I talked about how the guards kind of just shot us into a deep dark hole and cost us that game against Duke. I feel there had to be a little bit of pressure added onto them because during the week, the media was like, you know, saying how Carolina didn't feed their bigs and they lost. Well, that's kind of a shot. You know, they're not saying that, you know, Paige and Barry need to be cut, but you're pretty much calling out the guards. And I feel that they kind of stepped up and return to form that they could play at potentially. So it was almost a polar opposite of seeing Barry hit threes and Paige hit shots and even Nate Britt got in on the action. Because I'm pretty sure all year we've had the highest up front scoring bigs all year. We average like 43 points a game in the paint. So that really hasn't been a problem, but everything with that, and when the guards lack, our defense lacks and everything, but that was just a perfect picture. We got on Miami pretty early. We had a nice end of first half run, which we've kind of lacked on this year. And I think we just showed that when we play good basketball, we can be very good. That was a game where if we would have lost, it would have been a little bit of a turmoil and crapshoot to see how we're going to finish in the ACC. But we're back on and top now, and I'm not going to say that the Tar Heels are like my USC football where you don't know what you're going to get. It turns into a bipolar team. But this is definitely a good version. If the guards play just good enough basketball, when you rotate five to six bigs, which we do, we're a very hard team to beat. And it was just a very nice reassuring win. That's the best that the Carolina Tar Heels have looked, Chris, in about 6 to 7 games. And what do you know? We also play Duke again within 2 weeks. So it'd be kind of nice to get a little revenge there and see if that confidence can carry over. But definitely a nice reassuring win to be back up top on the ACC alone in first place, buddy.
Yeah, and that obviously such a crucial win, especially with Miami bouncing back in a very competitive game against Virginia as well. That really helped you guys to actually have that extra push to get Virginia, that extra loss. We'll go into detail a little bit more with that later in the recap segment. 54% from the field, which is just phenomenal. Not heavy on the turnovers, and 9 of 20. It's not really – I mean, the fact that you took 20, that's a lot, but, you know, for you guys anyway. But 9 makes. If North Carolina makes 9 threes, that's a lot for them. You know, that's a very dangerous team if you're making it like that. And you know, maybe it wouldn't even be 9. Maybe it would be, you know, 6 of 13 or something like that. The fact is, it really doesn't matter how many you're shooting. The fact that they're going in, that's crucial too. And man, did they need that Miami? You know, we know that they West Virginia last week in Miami over the weekend. They drew the short straw, so to speak, for the week as far as who they had to go against. West Virginia. You know, it was a rough one for them. It was definitely a rough one for them. Whereas Miami, they could have really sat down and been like, oh, man, we just got our butts kicked. Maybe we're not as good as we were. But they did bounce back, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get into Sunday and especially Monday. We did have some good games last night as well. So many tight games overall to talk about. Villanova, though, as we kind of breeze through a couple of these scores from Saturday, Villanova keeps it moving. They're now 13-1, 24-3, and they have Xavier coming up here this week. And like I said, they do have a 2-game, you know, cushion. So theoretically, they could lose and then win out and still win the Big East. There is some speculation that if Xavier won, that they would be in line. There was an article written not long ago. I was actually discussing this with a friend, and then he was saying, you know, I just read that article about how, you know, Xavier could be a number one seed as well. And, you know, the way this season's going, right away I kind of dismissed it. I said, nah, that couldn't happen. And I still believe that, that it won't. It's not likely. But, man, when you start to add it up, and if you kind of add up how many losses people have and then the next 4 games or so, and if you were to lose early in a conference and start to add a couple more losses, you go, man, the way this season's going, I guess that's not completely mind-shattering, but it's definitely not a likely scenario. And if you look at, you know, the non-conference Xavier actually did pretty good in, whereas Villanova has some holes, and I think ultimately that'll catch up with them, especially if Oklahoma, who, by the way, got it done. We'll talk about that in a big, big spot there. But let's keep it moving here. 72-63, Kansas beats Kansas State. The feisty little home crowd there, man. They were getting down again. Xavier, 88-70. I believe Georgetown was a team that did actually beat them in conference, so they got a little retaliation. Dayton, they just keep sliding, man. 79-72 now. They got beat by St. Bonaventure. Dayton, man, they are definitely not on the up and up heading into March Madness. Man, they looked good there for a while. Oregon, 91-81. They got the job done. They still hold on to one of their close spots. Them in Arizona, a couple other teams battling out. Louisville beats Duke. And Louisville, you got to give them some credit here, man, because you obviously they don't have much to play for besides pride at this point. And a lot of these players don't have anything to do with what happened. And in fact, I would guess that most of them, if not all of them, because of, you know, the last couple of years, a lot of that team is gone now. So really cool for them to keep that moving. And then let's get into some of this detail here. Georgia Tech and Notre Dame came all the way down to the closing seconds. Georgia Tech got it done, 63-62. Notre Dame kind of all over the place at this point. Baylor gets a big, kind of a, I'm not going to say a surprising, Marshall, but they did get a big win at Texas. Texas tried to make it, you know, interesting at times because they had gotten down so quickly, I believe. Actually, let me see here. 40-22 at half. They did battle back enough to keep them, I'm not going to say in the game, but within striking range, I guess, if Baylor kind of went down that road. It'll be interesting to see how Baylor closes. Obviously, they have a big game coming up against Kansas. What you think of that, man? Baylor, was it just a time for Texas to kind of come out flat and Baylor to say, hey, we are a pretty damn good club here, too. Don't forget about us.
I think it's going to be super hard, Chris, to predict how Baylor will do. I know in, like, the late 2000s, or well, I guess 05 to, like, 09 or 10, they'd make good runs, but lately they've been kind of slumping. So they are kind of a wild card, but they really – it's like all their guys are like 6'6", 6'7". They can all like shoot and pass the ball. They're kind of a different squad, I guess you could say. And that squad of athleticism played really well against Texas. The one negative for Texas, and obviously we've been pretty high on them all year, and lately it's improved, but that game they really didn't shoot the three. That was kind of a little bit of a hindrance for them at the start of the season. And in that game particularly, they kind of had a rough going of shooting the three. And Baylor, on the other hand, with Torian Prince and Motley, that guy was 12 for 12 in the game and took like a late jumper at the end and finished 12 for 13. But, you know, you had a guy in Baylor that didn't miss. You have Prince on Baylor, who I think sometimes is unguardable because I want to say the guy's probably 6'6", 6'7", and can run the court as fast as anyone and can shoot threes and, like, dribble. Like, they offer lots of matchup difficulties, and when they do pass the ball and play defense and defend them, it's just super hard for me to discuss, Chris, because some games you see Baylor and you're like, God, this team is, like, super good. Yeah. But you see some games you're like, what the hell was that? I obviously want to give them a compliment. That was a very nice win. They stuck it to Texas. No team has done that to Texas for a couple of months. And Texas did actually beat Baylor in Baylor about a month ago. So I want to jump on the bandwagon, but there's so many highs and lows for that team. So, but a Motley and a Terrian Princeton, they have a point guard, I'm drawing a blank on his name, that can shoot the three ball really well. So when they click, they click. I guess that's the best way to describe it. But clearly that was a very nice win by Baylor. I don't know. They're one of the more tougher teams I think we'll have to predict come tournament time. Because when they're hot, they're just such a freakishly athletic team, in my opinion. When they're cold, you know, they do things like blow up a halftime tied against Texas Tech at home and lose by like 23. So it's very fascinating. So it's hard to say, but yeah, and to to quickly touch on Louisville, I'm with you. I mean, obviously, I was happy to see Duke lose. Grayson Allen got fouled out. Coach K got teed up. So that was pretty fun. But I'm with you. That Louisville team does show a lot of heart. You know, I guess they were saying when I was watching that Louisville-Duke game that they put up a huge blown-up poster of the conference standings in the ACC and their goals to win it. You know, now clearly, you know, Carolina would have to fall down a little bit, which is possible, unfortunately. And Louisville could possibly still win the ACC title. It'd be a little difficult, but it's attainable. And they're playing for that goal. Obviously, for the seniors, it's kind of tough to suck up because I don't believe the seniors on that team were accused of some of the issues that happened. Maybe I could be wrong, but definitely a tough scenario. But as you said, playing for pride along with SMU. From a Duke standpoint, Chris, I'll say this. I don't know. I mean, I know that injury bug, but – and this isn't even Carolina bias. If they're going to be playing six people, like, for the rest of the year, it puts them in a very weird stance. Because obviously you have Grayson Allen, who, you know, I don't like the guy, but the dude can score. And you have Ingram, who I think a lot of people are giving him a ton of praise, like saying he could be a first, second overall pick. Well, in Carolina's game, he shot 7-for-21. And against Louisville, he had 10 turnovers. So I think we should calm down a little bit. But if you have two horses and one guy on your bench, I mean, maybe I'm enjoying the fact that Duke's struggling, but if you're only six deep and the guy that comes off your bench isn't that good of a big, it's going to be a hell of a run for them. Now, clearly Duke's had some good wins this year, but we found out in that game, if you get into foul trouble and you pretty much anyone else on the Duke team gets injured, they could have an early exit, which, again, I wouldn't mind, but the lack of depth they have is a big problem for them this year. And even with a piece like Ingram and Grayson Allen, Chris, if you're only six deep and your coach isn't even super confident and you're big, it's tough to trot guys out consistently 40 minutes in a row. Because I believe some of the Duke players played the full second half of Carolina and almost the full first half of the game and played almost the full game of Louisville. And not that these guys are in good shape, but it does take kind of a number on you. The same with Iowa State, who keeps repping. If all your starters are averaging 35 to 36 minutes a game, there is kind of a wear-down factor that, as good as these kids might be, I think it's hard to ignore.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, that's kind of been, of late, what they've been going through, especially when Jones added, you know, to that list. Now, they do get the big back in their next game. They do get Thornton back as well. Because they have three guys hurt. So, but, you know, getting them back and getting them ready to play, there's two different things. You never know about that. So, definitely. I mean, I didn't expect a ton from this season anyway, so I think Coach K is doing a pretty good coaching job over there, actually, if you look at, you know, what they're dealing with in general. And just to speak on Baylor, dude, they were shooting, what was it, 57%?
That's crazy.
And Gathers,
that's
only
scary, man.
I think he came off the bench and played a good 15 or 20 minutes, something like that. So they're not really relying on him. But yeah, I mean, Louisville's definitely showing some heart, and you know, you gotta like that. You gotta like that, especially for the two guys that came there as the, you know, the transfers, to be like, hey, all right, man, we're gonna make a nice deep run. Oh, we're not going anywhere. Guess, you know, that's rough for those two guys. And like you said, the people that didn't have anything to do with it. So the last couple of weeks, but really heavy last week, we talked about Oklahoma. And obviously West Virginia and Oklahoma were in a big spot. Even if, you know, even if Kansas gets it done inside the division, Oklahoma still has to worry, and same with West Virginia for that matter, and they still were right on the door knocking on it with a chance actually coming into this, you know, to this week, or last week, I should say, this weekend and what we've done, you know, last night and everything like that. But it was actually a tale of two halves, but that's kind of way it plays out. If you look at the stats here, 28 to 26 at half, which for those two teams, It's pretty low scoring, especially Oklahoma. But then again, West Virginia does D you up a lot, so that's exactly what they were doing. But man, the second half, 48-36, they almost put up 50 points on a stingy D. Buddy definitely started hitting some shots at the right time. Neither team shot a great percentage. That's for dang sure. I think they got up to like 40%. But, you know, that's Oklahoma I'm speaking of. West Virginia was well under 30 for the whole game. You know, they just grinded it out. And it was one of those, they get a little lead, maybe a minor cushion. And then all of a sudden it would kind of evaporate. And it kind of bounced back and forth like that. Then it seemed like Oklahoma was kind of taking over. They just got a nice – they didn't get a ton from their bench, but they did get a nice – just nice production from everyone. Almost everyone was in double figures. You had the two bigs, 8 and 9 points, but you had 13 and 6 rebounds and 6 blocks by Latin. We talked about, you know, Spangler, but, man, Latin, 9 points, 13 boards, 3 steals, and 6 blocks. That's pretty good for a big guy. What are your takeaways from this game with West Virginia and Oklahoma? Is this enough to make you feel like, okay, they got a nice big win on the road, which clearly we know is not easy to do in college basketball, and right now this year, especially inside the deep Big 12 conference, it looks like they definitely righted the ship for the time being anyway. Oklahoma did.
Yeah, you know, again, I think, you know, Buddy stepped it up. It seems like that's a quote we use for almost every game, and not that he's not a great player, shouldn't be able to. But I know that game was, like, within, like, 2 to 3 points, like, for most of it. And I know in the last couple of minutes, OU kind of pulled away. It almost seems like, and I'll repeat quickly what I said last week, is, you know, it seems like in the Big 12 teams are just taking turns. It's like, oh, you had their back to the wall, they lost 2 out of 3, or they've been on a cold streak, and it's like, all right, guys, we finally got to get back on track. And West Virginia been playing pretty well since then. So to almost even look past the X's and O's, it seems like the top teams that are in the Big 12 are like, all right, let's win 2 or 3 in a row, lose to a team that needs one, then we'll get on. It's almost like a repetitive cycle, Chris, that doesn't stop ending. But, I mean, looking past that or adding on to that, OU did play well. You know, as you mentioned, Latvin had a very good game. Obviously, Buddy Hield stepped up in the end. There was one interesting thing I thought of. They mentioned about how Oklahoma wasn't that pressable. I know when they played the first game, it's Oklahoma torched them on threes. And, obviously, Oklahoma beat West Virginia again. So maybe there's a chance that the presence that Oklahoma that West Virginia delivers doesn't bother Oklahoma as much as others. Clearly, you have guys in Cousins and Hield who can handle the ball. So maybe there's an X factor of the fact that when Oklahoma plays West Virginia, they're not as intimidated as other teams. Because I don't believe the turnover numbers were, you know, huge or out of proportion that truly affected OU to possibly lose. So I think there's a handful of teams maybe gifted enough with good guards to where they're going to press you. They're going to cause some problems, but maybe it's not that big of a factor, Chris, as compared to when some other teams play at West Virginia and you have almost a sense of panic. And especially at home, they can go on a run on you really quick and you're kind of, you know, shaking your head a little.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And we'll see, you know, if that lasts, because they still have that number one seed available to them. Their win against Villanova by, I believe, well, for sure double digits. It may have been by 20, but I know it was at least, I'd say, 14 or 16 and up. So they're still definitely in contention for it 100%. Them and Virginia are kind of those squads, you know, the second squad in the conference that's still, because of their non-conference play, and obviously within the conference as well, to an extent anyway, but without winning it, they still are lingering. Obviously, what happened last night with Virginia, you know, definitely hurts some of that. But there's still time left. And here's two teams within the SEC, which is just keeps tightening up over and over again. One team was trending upwards, we talked about with Kentucky, clearly trending upwards. And A&M, clearly trending downwards. And there was times in the game, it was a tight game, 36-35 at half. It was well played on the defensive end, I thought. Neither team shot the ball, or I should say A&M didn't shoot the ball well. But, man, Kentucky had it going there for a while. And they shot 50%, and 50% from three. Not many turnovers at all, only nine. So, to me, you're shooting under 40%. The team that you're playing is feeling good about themselves, and they're playing well. And really, it looked like, when you look at that game in the closing minutes, Marshall, it looked like Kentucky was on their way to win that game. You know, it had that feeling.
You there, buddy? Hopefully Chris will come back. I know sometimes the phone where he lives is a little bit rough of a reception because he lives near an airport. Hopefully Chris will be back on here soon. Look, let me know when you get back on the air, bud. And normally Chris is able to log back on in a minute or two with whatever happened, hopefully.
All right, I'm back.
Still here. Oh, okay. Hopefully just a minor fix for Chris, and he should be back on the air soon.
Marshall.
Yeah.
There?
Yeah, I'm here, bud.
Huh. That was strange. I think I want to say that my roommate accidentally unhooked the internet and refreshed or something and didn't know I was doing a show or something. I don't think he saw the... Huh, it must be, because otherwise it's like literally the connection, you know? There's like...
Sure.
It died. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm not sure what you talked about or if you talked about anything in Kentucky, what you heard, you know, down the wire, but... To me, Kentucky looked like they had the game. I'm going to say one, but it looked like in the closing even minute or so, as far as in regulation, it looked like they had enough of a gap there, enough of a cushion to grind out the game, and they didn't do it. They did not do it. They left the door open for A&M, who really scrapped their way to this win, shooting under 40% when you got a team playing good defense, obviously, shooting 50% from the field and from the three-point stripe. Grind it out and get to overtime, Marshall. I was really impressed, and obviously to do it in the closing seconds there, how they did dramatically. They really needed that win and got it somehow, some way.
Yeah, it was when they needed it. I think they had lost 6 out of 7, which was kind of weird for a team in their minds that had been ranked in the top five, Chris. Again, you know, their offensive issues aren't going away, but they do have Moore, and they have Davis, who had the game-winning basket, who I just love that kid. As a freshman center, he's going to be around for a while. Maybe he'll end up going pro a little bit, but a couple of pieces. But one thing is they did do very well, despite not shooting the ball well, is they crashed the boards really well. Having, you know, I believe 25 offensive rebounds, like that's making up for any mishaps that you could have possibly had from, you know, not shooting the ball particularly well. So that was a very nice win. obviously, you know, when we did our show last week, I had really thought that Kentucky was going to win after the way they demolished South Carolina. I really thought they would kind of keep that momentum going and beat another team who definitely lacks some of the offensive potential that compared to Kentucky's skills. So obviously, Chris, kind of an overwhelming question, or not, I shouldn't say overwhelming, but a hot topic to discuss from this game. What were your thoughts on how it ended with the technical being given to the player? From what I've heard, for that rule, is this kind of a discretion of a referee. And clearly, you know, I don't think there was obviously a lot of negative intent or upset over a call. Clearly, the call had been in their favor. What was your overall reaction to it right away? And then has your thought of maybe change over the last couple of days as to how that situation was handled? You there, bud? I hope we didn't lose him again. Maybe that connection got reset again on accident. Let me know when you get back on, buddy, and then we can discuss the technical at the end of the Kentucky A&M game, which clearly was controversial. There was a play that involved the center spiking the basketball, which I know Chris will obviously have his opinion on. Hopefully he'll be back here in a minute again. Well, I guess he is trying to reset that. At the end of the game, the Kentucky center had the ball in his hands for the with about 9 seconds left, and was called for being fouled. And Kentucky was up one at this point in overtime, and he essentially was going to go down to the end of the court and shoot free throws. And after the fall was called, he could tell he was very excited. I know he's not a starter, but he's a guy that Calipari says has been playing more and more, and he ended up spiking the ball. And that kind of unwritten rule, which I really don't like in the NBA or in college ball for that matter, is if you spike the ball on the court, you better catch it or else it'll be perceived as, you know, trying to show up the ref. For base, that was kind of the rule of the thumb or rule of the law for anyways with that for a while. And the player did spike the ball on the court and clearly didn't catch it. It went up a little too high. You could tell he was motivated to go and try and ice the game and win. And since the ball did trickle away from him, the ref just happened to be standing almost behind his shoulder blades, right behind him in a way. And you could tell he was trying to get the ball to move down the court and was caught kind of there and teed him up. And the look on the kid's face, I'll never forget, he was just kind of stunned. He was like, you could tell that he just realized he'd screwed up quite a bit. He was given a technical, and actually that tossed him out of the game because that was his fifth foul. And then they went down to obviously shoot free throws on both sides, and A&M coming out going them on top. Are you back, Chris?
Yeah, I'm back. I just called in. I don't know what the heck's going on with my internet right now. It's kind of weird. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can hear you good and clear now. Hopefully it stays that way, bud.
Well, I mean, at least it's a phone now, too.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess I'll just try in a little bit with my... I was hoping I could – maybe it'd just be a so-so connection, but I would be able to just have it on and then call in, you know, on the guest line and just do that. Because obviously,
sure.
For me to talk, I gotta call into that. Otherwise, something has to be into the host line for me to talk, you know. So,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on. It's really crazy.
Huh.
I'm not sure. But anyway, I heard – I was kind of in and out because I would kind of Skype in and I'd hear a chunk of it and then I'd fall out. So I'm sure you did a good job recapping that, obviously. Because like I said, I saw it at work, it looked like the call was going against the guy and he screamed and he slammed the ball. And right when he did it, he had the reaction of, oh, shit, I probably shouldn't have done that. And then he got in trouble. So for me, just looking at it from that standpoint while I'm looking at the – just looking up at it, you know, while I'm working, that's what it looked like to me. So I was totally off base of what happened there because the second he slammed the ball, you could tell he's like, oh, and he tried to like control the ball. And he was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. So, that was a celebration in a sense. Is that what that was? Because slamming the ball in celebration if the game's not over is definitely something a ref can say something about, in my opinion. When you already scream, that's fine. Everyone can scream or whatever, but because he wasn't doing it in someone's face, you know, that's something that they're definitely getting on now a lot more this year as well. That's part of the rule change as far as not showing up an opponent to them. You can scream and shout and do anything you want. It has to be towards the teammate, or it has to be just in the air to the crowd. You know what I mean? I also noticed that's something they're definitely. But when you slam the ball like that, and you kind of even knew he was guilty because he grabbed the ball a little bit or tried to, and it was like, oh, shit, what am I doing? The game's not over. Did he think the game was over? Or, you know what I mean? That's what it felt like to me. That celebration told me that the game's over or I'm pissed. And it was neither of those. So I think that it was the right call in that sense, although it is discretionary, like you said.
I'm not sure when you're going back in, but there've always kind of been that rule, whether it's pro or college, of, you know, if you slam the ball down, and most of the time that does happen in the NBA, you better catch it on the way back up or you're going to get teed up. Now, I don't necessarily like that rule, because if you slam the ball down and catch it, you know, oh, that's okay. But if you slam the ball down and slips out of your grip or goes too high, then you get teed up. It's like, well, really? You know, and like I said, the ref was directly behind him. I don't think there was any malintent or dropping any F-bombs or anything towards the ref about a call, because he's the one that had been given the foul to be credited for. So, and then you get the super weird scenario of how...
But have you seen it in celebration, though, Marshall? I rarely see a slam ball in celebration, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you normally do see it after the game. That's true, or maybe like when the clock is running out. In my opinion, though, like slamming the ball to be happy and having it slip out of your hands is really no different than, you know, I mean, walking up to your bench and celebrating hysterically. Like, I don't think the slamming the ball is an awful attempt. So, I don't know if I would have called it. Like, I get the thing of you're showing up a ref and slamming the ball and being upset about a call. But when you're not showing up a ref, like, you know, I mean,
what's the point of doing that then? What's the point of doing making such an – you already screamed. Isn't screaming good enough at that point, or do you have to slam the ball to an extent that you totally lost control of it? I guess that it's tough. It's a weird decision. I see what you're saying, though. I can understand. I mean, I'd have been, you know, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. And now that I know that it's different, like, I literally took that in a whole different way because of what I was doing at work. So I was like, what the hell, what's that dude doing, you know? So I just saw it real quick. So I'm glad that you actually saw the play and, you know.
I'll say this, Chris. I'll just make this one point. If coach can be warned before giving a technical, why can't that kid be warned right there before he gets a T? I mean, I've seen a lot of times here where, okay, I just saw a coach get warned before getting a T. Okay, well, that's kind of like, all right, dude, you know, you're talking a little smack. Let's calm down. Again, that's more of a negative offense. So if you can warn a coach before teeing him up, why the hell can't you give this kid a free pass on a move where he wasn't talking crap or mocking anyone or posing down someone in front of the bench? He just slammed the ball to be excited, and it slipped. Like, I don't know. I don't like it.
How many warnings do you get as a player, though? I mean, that's not something that's too common to warn guys. It's usually a coach.
Well, I just think that's a poor officiating call. I won't give a kid a T there. I mean, you know, and for the discrepancy we're seeing on flagrants this year and what's not a flagrant two and all this crap, like for a celebration moment where he wasn't showing up anyone on A&M who was near him, I wouldn't have given him a T there, but that's me. I get the rule of the law, but also this day by discretion. And that ref knew that he wasn't trying to. So I guess, you know, you can look at it two ways, but that is a pretty hard call to give when there's no negative intent.
Yeah, I hear you. I just think that if you're pissed to be able to do that, I think letting someone do that when they're pissed, if it's under control, is different than celebrating. So that's two celebrations technically, because he did scream. Right? And then he slammed the ball, and then we get into technicalities and all that. So, no, I know what you're saying.
because it didn't hit anybody. But the fact that he slammed it that hard, it wasn't like a normal, just, he didn't low dribble it, let's put it that way. You see a lot of guys low dribble, you know, where they just go, God damn it, you know, but they're told, whereas that guy said it almost felt like he thought he won the game. So I think it was an over celebration in a sense.
Yeah.
So
it was. I'll give you that.
That's a tough call. That's a really tough call. But the fact that they grinded it out and won it anyway, they obviously needed that. And then they played good enough to even have it to come down to that call. They played good enough to, you know, to somewhat win that game. Obviously, that had a lot to do with the pivotal thing. But let's keep it moving. We got to pick up the pace now. I just because of all the issues we've been having. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, good. Just making sure. Purdue in Indiana. Last Saturday, big game. Obviously, Purdue needing another quality win. Obviously, Indiana definitely needing another quality win in to keep pace with Iowa and others at the top of the Big Ten. And these guys put on a pretty damn good show, I'd have to say. I mean, when you start to look at these numbers, 77-73, Indiana did get it done. They had a minor cushion of 7 points, 35-28 at half. Purdue really played well in the second half, got all the way up to 45 points. They went 45-42, the half anyway. But Indiana got a nice, nice win. And, gosh, when you look at these stats, man, I mean, obviously the 13 turnovers for Purdue compared to the 4 really bit them in their ass because they're shooting almost 59%, Marshall, from the field. And it's not like Indiana's slouching. They were 47%. Just a well-played game except for there's costly turnovers with Purdue. And that basically – to me, tells you what happened in the game because they got production off their bench. Both teams got a little bit of it anyway. What'd you think of this game, man? Indiana is now starting to come into form somewhat. They still aren't the most defensive unit out there, but you could say that about a lot of teams. It was just a well-played game. Considering the movement in Indiana, the go-go-go pace that they have, to have that low turnover rate, that was impressive, I thought, and that obviously is the reason why they won the game. Besides a couple of, you know, miscues and misses, there was I'd say within maybe 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, there was a fairly, they had their shots. Let's say that Purdue.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Purdue ever gets blown out. I think with the bigs they have, they're normally pretty good knocking out rebounded. They don't seem to have too many, you know, like wasted possession. I know you did mention turnovers. I mean, their turnover number is not extremely high per se, but also effect in this game with Indiana being much less turnovers. Overall, I just feel it's kind of a repetitive theme of Indiana has so much potential, but we still haven't seen them quite completely step into that mold, Chris. In Indiana, like you mentioned, it is kind of we're going to try and outscore you match. Obviously, at home, their home record consistently is pretty damn good every year. Clearly, Indiana-Purdue, that's probably Purdue and Indiana's biggest rivalry towards each other. I don't know if maybe if you asked a Purdue or Indiana fan, they'd say a different answer, but I believe those two are the hated just because of how close they are in proximity. But overall, Chris, I don't know, it just feels like Purdue, every game they lose is close. Like they were up on Maryland in Maryland turf a few weeks ago and they lost after being up at half, and now they lost another tight one. I know they lost a tight one to Iowa and then got blown out in the second half, so maybe there is just some offensive flow that maybe we're not going to find this year, and I almost feel like they're wasting it because they do have 3 7-foot bigs, and they have Swanigan, who's a big, I believe he's 7 foot or 6'10", that can shoot a three. So you got so many pieces there. Maybe they're just having a very hard time finding a way to make it all mesh together. Because for raw talent, I mean, if Carolina, we have a 4 to 5 bigs, but if we had like a 2 7-footers, like, oh my God, like Roy Williams would be in heaven. So So I think they got all the pieces, but I just don't think they're going to be able to find a way, Chris, to fix it to where they can make a deep run. But they're a good team. They're not bad at all. They like I said, they normally don't get housed too much, and they control the boards well. But there's a missing piece, and I'm not sure if we're going to find that before this season's over, my friend. Didn't lose you again, did we, bud?
You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Cool.
Okay. that was me. That was the mute button. So
oh, okay.
That's
okay,
a little
cool.
Different. Thank God. So kind of wrapping up the weekend before we get into last night's action as well. On Sunday, we had a spirited game between Maryland and Michigan. You know, Michigan, they're a pretty good club. They obviously have a good coach. And both teams, I thought, shot the ball very well. If you look at Maryland had a big advantage in free throw attempts and makes, obviously, 17 of 19 compared to 5 of 8. I think that's very telling. High turnover game, but it was a go-go game. I mean, both of them are in the 80s, but very high turnover game. Trimble had, you know, 7 of them. So they definitely turned the ball over both sides too much, just kind of go-go-go and not really handling it too well. If you look at the starters for Michigan, one has 5, one has 4, one has 3. So not necessarily the cleanest game that way. In Maryland, we know, had, you know, God, it's like a broken record this year, talking about every damn team in every conference that's a top team. They went through their struggle, you know, like it's crazy how this just keeps happening. But I think the key thing for Maryland, beyond the turnovers, was just getting a W. You know what I mean? They just needed to get that win. And that's exactly what they got over a really pretty solid Michigan team. Nothing, I don't even know if you'd say, oh, they're a very good team. You know what I mean? They're just a solid club, but they just came up short, and Maryland got a must win. I mean, they needed that just for their confidence and obviously with inside the Big Ten race too.
You know, I don't need to talk on Maryland much. I thought you did a nice job summing it up. We've talked about them weekly. They did get the win, though, that they needed. Like, their home court record, since they've joined the Big Ten, they've now only had one loss, so that continues to improve. I guess I should say, a little underimpressed. I mean, the main theme for Maryland is their offense, and when I watch Michigan play, their defense doesn't really scream out to me to be that great. So, I personally thought that they would kind of run away with the game. I know I was watching the first half, and Maryland was up 10-12 pretty comfortably. And then I was kind of shocked to turn it back on late near the end and see there was a very tight game. I thought it would kind of be a blowout. So, but obviously, when you're looking for a win, you really don't care how you get it done. I thought they'd been a little more convincingly. But as you said, Michigan can get hot from three. Just defensively, they don't really scream out to me that much. So overall, though, nice win. And that does keep Maryland up in top, trying to contend for that first-place race with Iowa, you know, obviously as well. So one other big team to mention, a team I guess I should cheer for a lot more than Maryland, was Wisconsin. Just small note, they did find a way to win. They beat Illinois. That's a win they needed to have to continue to bump up the resume. A lot of teams come this time of the tournament. If you're a fan of a team that maybe isn't the best team, you can handle losing to teams that are better than you. But when you play teams that are below you, a loss can be detrimental if you're not expected to lose. And versus Illinois, with a bottom feeder on the Big Ten, Wisconsin once, they're not going to finish for first, but I know, as you mentioned, their streak to try and finish in the top four is still alive there, Chris.
No doubt about it, and they still need a little bit more work, but I believe they'll make the tournament more than likely. You never know with this year and streakiness.
True.
And all that. I mean, now they're going to start to go through their downturn. Who knows? You're right, Maryland really jumped on them, but I thought Michigan, what was it, only like a 5-point game at half. Michigan really closed the last maybe 6 to 8 minutes out. I was like, wow, you guys really are in this game. It, like you said, I felt like just the first, I know it's only 10 minutes of a game, and you can never just call it like that. But in college basketball, it has a way of doing that rather than having those extra 8 minutes throughout the game to get back in. You see a lot more double-digit comebacks in the NBA than you do, you know, in college basketball, especially in that type of spot. But I thought Michigan played pretty well. But, man, Maryland needed that win really bad just to say, okay, let's get this thing stopped, and then maybe we can start patching up some of these holes in time before March Madness, and that's when you want to do it anyway. And what's crazy about this, I was talking about this with somebody else and just kind of the way the theme, the theory goes. You know, you always want to close hot, but, man, the way this year, Marshall, let's say you close hot, right? But then you sputter, you know, in the turn. Like, to close hot, sure, it means a lot for seeding. Of course, it always will. But, I mean, does that really, this year, does that guarantee much? I mean, that just kind of adds another layer to how hard these brackets to fill out, because you can say, man, they were hot. Yep, and they're due for their slump. And this other team that lost two of their last four, guess what? They're going to win five in a row now. So, it sure is, it's going to be fun filling out these freaking brackets, man. It's going to be, I got a feeling that I'm going to have to flip a coin from time to time when it comes
start
to
start throwing
that.
Darts, Chris.
Yeah, right? So, big game last night, Miami in Virginia, number 12 against number 3. We knew Miami had a tough, you know, tough hoe to sled, and especially the way they, you know, especially, you know, how they got just housed in that game against North Carolina. I was wondering, I was really intrigued to see how they would bounce back, because they got their butt whooped. There's no, you know, two ways about it. So they responded. They definitely responded. They were at home. We know they're a good club. Obviously, they put themselves in a position to strike late in this year at the ACC title, kind of just snuck up on people. And for Virginia, it's kind of crazy because they were one of the hotter teams in the conference as well. If you take away that travel at the end of the Duke game, and you're looking at a whole different, you know, a whole different ending here, possibly. Not that the ACC tournament's, you know, not tournament, the conference race is over. But the fact that Miami got that extra cushion really, really helped North Carolina, because the fact that Virginia and North Carolina still have to play, to have that little cushion on them to make them 10-5, that's huge, rather than Virginia being the 1-4 like Miami is. You know, they got some production off their bench, Virginia did. Miami got a tad bit, but it really came down to the starters in this game. And there were some holes in Virginia's offense beyond the star point guard, let's put it that way. He played a pretty solid game. He had to score a little bit more instead of being kind of the assist guy. Didn't shoot it from three that great. And I think that those were some of the differences right there. 10-19 was definitely big for Miami from the three. And they got a we talk about a must-needed win. This was huge for Miami, and it really helps your Tar Heels majorly, man.
Yeah, it is nice to have that cushion up top. Obviously, anything can happen. I'm not taking anything for granted the way this year's going. I know Carolina does play NC State tomorrow, which should be a win, but you never know. That was a nice boost. It was crazy. I was reading some articles yesterday because I was subbing, and obviously I had time to kill. A lot of people have been giving love to Virginia, and I'm not hacking them, but that Myron Metcalf on ESPN was like, well, I'm going to pick one team out of every conference that can win the title this year. And he chose Virginia out of the ACC. And with the theme we have this year of offense, like of, you know, Buddy Hield playing Kansas and, you know, triple OT and scoring almost in the hundreds, and a team like Kentucky and you know, these fast-paced offenses is, I just really don't know if a team like Virginia, who is clearly more defensive-based, which obviously is nothing to be ashamed of, can really make a deep run. It's like, as you mentioned, you know, they had holes in their offense, and Miami obviously had a lackluster game defensively against Carolina, but normally that's a pretty good D, especially at home. I just don't know if this Virginia team, you know, I know they had their nice run, but I don't know if they have enough pieces, Chris, to make a deep run. Obviously, this game wasn't a blowout. Virginia had a chance to actually go up by one with like 20 seconds to go, and they shot a three. Actually, out of a pretty nice play, have a timeout. They had a chance to go for the lead, and they went for it instead of going for a tie in the road, which I got nothing wrong with that. It came up a little short, but just kind of for an overview of them, reading so much praise they're getting in a possible one seed, and maybe they've earned that, obviously, for the record. We can discuss that in a couple of weeks, but you need some offense this year. You're not going to – I don't think you can run into a team throughout your run and just lock them down, because there's too many teams that are gifted that can score 80, 90 this year, and I think with that slug-out style they have, that could be a little tricky for them come the future, Chris.
Well, maybe. I do remember a couple of clubs just grinding teams out. I mean, the 2 years UConn won, they had one guy, and then they kind of developed some guys around him, especially the second year. That was more of a, I'm not going to say one-man show, but it wasn't this, at least the first run, they actually acquired some guys in there, not acquired, but they developed some guys. All of a sudden, it was like, whoa, man, they're really better now at the end of the year. But, you know, how far does offense get you, you know, in the big dance? Probably just as far as defense, in my opinion. I think it comes down to some of the pieces, like you mentioned. The reason why they're getting the love ranking-wise and first seed-wise is because of their – well, first of all, they do have a decent, you know, the ACC is right up there with toughest conference. I think it's the second toughest conference. I think the Big Ten's down this year to an extent anyway. Not down, but it's not what it's been the last 3 or 4 years, in my opinion. Who do you think, like Iowa, do you think they'll win the national title? Do you feel like
I honestly think they can win the title this year.
But, like, I'm saying right this moment, though. You know, that's what's about this year. Right this moment, no. They haven't been looking that good lately. But that's not to say that they can't. But I just think it's a little down. But here's the key for Virginia. They have non-conference wins, Marshall, over the number one team in the country right now, Villanova, and West Virginia. So that has to be put into that equation. West Virginia was just Virginia, by the way. Speaking of no defense, West Virginia and Iowa State played last night, 49-41. And then, oh, by the way, let's actually score more, 48-46 more combined, 97-87. Unbelievable. Paige just went off. But to answer your question, Virginia, when you have those non-conference wins, that's pretty impressive as well. But as far as a deep run, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they've had a couple of clubs that I believe Michigan State knocked out 2 years ago. I want to say they played last year, too, in the tourney. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think Michigan State beat them. Maybe they – was it back-to-back years or just 1 year that they beat them? Maybe it was just last year. I don't know.
I think just 1 year, but yeah.
Just last year then, or maybe it was the year before? I don't remember now.
Maybe,
anyway,
I think it was the year before, yeah.
Year before, okay. I think it was a Sweet 16, 1-4, I believe.
Sure.
I think that makes more sense. I think you're right on that. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll definitely see, no doubt about it. But I think they have to be, you know, the eye test and looking around counts, but it counts who you beat, too. And obviously they have some of the best wins in the country, if you start to say, you know, what's Villanova, how good are they? I don't know. I'm not going to sit there and talk about that per se. But on the ledger, it says you beat the number one team. And if they beat Xavier, they likely will finish number one this year and have a number one seed if they do that. And even if they don't and end up doing it in the conference tourney, they'll probably be the number one seed as well. So that'll help Virginia the whole season long. And obviously, like I said, when West Virginia is knocking on the door, the closing weeks of the best, and I believe the best conference in the country, the Big 12, that tells me you got to respect Virginia to an extent as well. But you're right. You know, they definitely had only a one-man show in this game, 100%. And the rest of the starters need to step up, no doubt about it. It looked like they found their offense mid-season here. Is it gone? I don't know. It was kind of a good grinded-out defensive game. And speaking of that, Marshall, Texas-Kansas State. What do you know? Kansas State played someone tough at home. There was a couple of times even on that Kansas game that they played before, you know, that there was times that they almost closed the gap on Kansas, and then Kansas would kind of push them away and whatnot. Close game. Texas needed to just kind of bounce back and be like, all right, we lost, no big deal. Let's keep it moving, though, because it's not like they have a great overall record. They only have 18 wins as we speak. So not to say that they can't get in the tournament, because I believe they're a shoo-in in the tournament, but they still needed this W, and we know Kansas State has been that team that finds a way at home to make it competitive, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you know, it was a closer game than I thought. I did think Texas would win by a decent margin. Maybe that 4-11 conference record of Kansas State is a little bit of a misconception. I almost feel, I remember saying this a couple months ago, because the Kansas State football record in their non-conference was miserable. But, you know, when you're facing, you know, the teams they had to face this year in football, it's almost the same story, maybe some different characters. Now, clearly Kansas football is not going to scare you or almost anyone. But kind of the same thing of, you know, the record isn't quite as good as maybe it indicates, because you beat OU, you fought Texas, you fought Kansas. Overall, Texas, they shot the ball better than they did in the game against Baylor. Isaiah Taylor continues to step up. Felix, their point guard, scored 13 points, which I'd say maybe is a little bit above his average. And their guy Davis off the bench dropped him 10. So it seems like they're continuing to develop more people off the bench, Chris, for Texas, to where you can come in and get a couple of baskets. Obviously, the Baylor game was a tough beat, but this was a game, like you said, they had to win. Texas is kind of in that range of probably like anywhere from a potential like 4 seed to like a 7 seed. So obviously, polishing your resume now is going to help you. And this year, where you're not quite sure who the hell is going to go where, for, as we mentioned, for the tournament, a higher seed will help. I do not want to be Selection Sunday when it's going to be kind of a crapshoot of, you know, for the Big 12, for example, like almost everyone has beat everyone in a way. Or maybe, you know, for like Iowa State always plays well as against Kansas, and Oklahoma can beat West Virginia, but West Virginia, you know, can't beat Baylor. And you start crossing, you know, strings back and forth, and you're like, well, who the hell do we deserve to give a better chance to in this conference? And when it comes down to it, if everyone kind of beat each other up, you kind of have to look at their overall conference record, Chris. So, yeah, nice one by them. And before we move on to continuing to talk about this upcoming week, I have one quick, and I was listening to a podcast of ESPNU, so some ESPN people, and they talked about the Ben Simmons incident where he was not allowed to start his past game this past weekend for not going to class. And I'm not even lying to you, bud. The initial reaction of all three of the guys on the podcast was, I don't blame Ben Simmons for not going to class.
Going to class.
I'm sorry?
You said not.
The question they asked each other on the podcast was, do you think you should have to? Sorry.
So did he?
Okay,
I got you.
Well, yeah, so
that's what it was?
Well, that's the question they posed to each other. And all three of their answers were, yeah, of not going to class. And all three of their answers were, nah, why should he? And I was floored that all three of the guys were like, well, why should he care about going to class? It's like, really? Like, that's the answer you're going to give for all the situations we discussed? And like, you know, Ben Simmons is great and he's going to go to the NBA next year, but the answer that you give and working for ESPN is like, I wouldn't go. Like, are we to that point now where if you're like a great athlete, you don't have to go to class? Like, I just couldn't believe that as an initial reaction. It's like, dude, it's still a privilege to get an education. Like, and you're getting it for free, where most kids would die to go to college. Like, I was just floored that their answer were, he doesn't need to go. He's going to NBA next year. Well, no, screw that. I mean, we talk about wanting to pay these kids in so many different scenarios. I was just really upset when I heard, he doesn't need to go. No, he does. It completely spun me the wrong way. These kids get to play, and I know they make a lot of money, and they do earn the colleges a ton of money, but you're also going to college for free, and LSU is not like some cheap, like, you know, local community tech school. So the least you can do, and I'm not saying that he's skipping class and everything, but the answer those guys gave me, I was just like, no, we're to the point now where you should go to class, because even if you are going pro next year, maybe you do suffer an injury or something to that effect. Or even if you're going to be at LSU for 1 year, you should at least go to class, and you might not get the best grades or maybe not care too much, but skipping class, I was like, that's bullshit. You're an athlete that's also a member of a college, and just the fact they gave that answer just drove me off the wall. So I had to get that off my chest. I don't think you'd agree with them either, but it's like, dude, you're a student athlete. You're not an athlete that's like, I'm going pro. I don't give a shit about classes. No, the world doesn't work that way. And you know, you're going to get in trouble for it. Like Carolina, obviously, we had a bigger effect with that class. But just the principle of the fact they're like, you don't need to go because you're good. Well, that's stupid, and I don't think that's the message you just send or the message an athlete should have, whether they're gifted or if they're on the track team or swimming team, because those kids, maybe you're the best diver at LSU. You're not skipping class. You'd probably get kicked off the team. So I didn't like that answer, buddy.
That's that big of a deal. He missed class. We all missed class. It's one thing to say that, but it's another thing to say that he does need to stay on the team. So, yeah, he does actually.
Yeah.
Make it a big, like, if I was drafting him, I wouldn't say, oh, dude, he's skipped class. He's a bad person, because we all skip classes. You know what I mean? So, I'm not worried about the skipping classes. But, if a couple of people in the ESPN, if they said it that exact way, then, that's nonsense. It's one thing to say, it's not. In the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. Then that's a little different, because it's not like he's, you know, it's not like he's suspended and he go to class or is failing his stuff or whatever, you know, whatever. But let's keep it moving, though. We got about 20 minutes left of the show. Big game tonight. Number 2 Kansas, number 19 Baylor. Who knows what the hell Baylor's going to do here? They out-won against Texas. They beat Iowa State. They also lost to Texas Tech not too long ago. They lost to West Virginia now at the beginning of the month. They are coming around with 2 quality wins in a row. But you could say the same thing about Kansas. In fact, even more quality. West Virginia, they beat them. They beat Oklahoma. So this one is in Baylor. It is in Lake. So I'm actually going to go out on the limb. And I'm going to pick tonight. I think that, I shouldn't even say I think. I'm just picking them. I'm going to say that they're going to, because Kansas now is due for a loss. They at least have 5 in a row, maybe even a little more. I'm just going to get there and say this, with this inconsistency of the theme this year and the fact that the standings look a little more settled in the 12. They're going to unsettle. Another big game. Michigan, that's not my fault. That's not really a big game at all. Ohio State is not what they are as far as the quality program this year. But what's your gut telling you Kansas goes into Waco, Texas?
I think that Baylor gets it done. I don't know. I think they can't. They did beat OU, but I think besides that, they've lost, 3 out of 4 on the road. So I just think, the athleticism, I believe the athleticism of Baylor is going to cause Kansas issues. I don't think that this is one of the more magical Kansas teams we've had lately. Now, clearly they find ways to win every year, which blows my mind. But I just think going on the road and the athleticism, I just don't think Kansas is going to match up that well against them due to the size. And Kansas' front court really hasn't impressed me this year. The Kansas has some guards that can move the ball very well, And, you know, Perry Ellis, but he normally plays from the top of the key too. So I just think the versatility, and Kansas is going to have to find a way to, you know, nail some threes. I know they have kind of a couple of snipers. I know one kid comes off the bench, and Graham shot the three ball very well against Oklahoma. But you're going to have to find a way to shoot the threes consistently against Baylor's zone. And I don't know, I just think the athletic ability is a bad matchup for Kansas in this game, but so I think that Baylor gets it done tonight.
You know, what's funny is they actually recently just retooled Kansas some of their offense, and actually they shoot the three more now. So it's funny that you bring that up. Like I said, there's not many games that completely jump out at you during the week. We're going to get to Saturday here really quick. But Villanova and Xavier, Villanova does have a cushion. You know, 13-1 compared to 12-3. But it's a big game. And if down the stretch, Nova, who hasn't, you know, gone through the slump just yet, beyond, I guess you could say, losing to a non-conference, which isn't really a slump, but they did have a chance, Villanova, to prove themselves at a high level and failed to do it in the non-conference to an extent, in my opinion. So that's as far as a big, you know, ranked on ranked, obviously Wisconsin and Iowa. Iowa really needs to go against a team that, like we documented the last couple weeks, they're hot. They're definitely hot. They're coming in hot, and they're starting to figure out how they're going to, you know, kind of mesh together. So that would be interesting as well. If you have any other ones you want to cover, I say we get Saturday because, man, if you look at Saturday, it's just, of course, Saturday, you know, usually has some big games in the afternoon, and there usually is a pretty damn good game at night, you know what I mean? That's just how they set up the call of basketball, but it's not been this, you know, usually, traditionally, it's not this crazy full of games, and
I lost you there for the last second, bud. I think you're just coming in a little staticky, that's all. Yeah, I can hear you. It's just a little rough on the mic, it sounds. You there, Chris? Let me know when you get back, then we can break down this upcoming weekend, which the Saturday has been treating us very well, so hopefully we can get this part in of the show, too. Well, hopefully Chris will be back here in a little bit, and we can kind of preview and predict the games on Saturday. We're getting down to, we only have a couple of Saturdays left. Soon we'll be picking games on Sunday. I believe it's only 3 weeks away, or not even, so... The March Madness is coming. The brackets are going to be insane. The conference tournaments are going to be really fun this week. Actually,
all right, hopefully
the,
I'm back. Hopefully I stay back.
Okay.
I decided to use a different method here, and hopefully it stays. Something's up, though, because now the freaking switchboard's all messed up. So I guess the fact that we've been so lucky with both shows, actually, if you look at the fall and the winter so far, we've been really lucky, and that's not the case today. So luckily I don't have to like unmute myself or anything like that. There was a caller in the queue from 818. Once I can get this thing back up, I will be going to you. I apologize. We're just having some technical difficulties right now. But you know, it is what it is. But like I was saying, on Saturday, you know, traditionally Saturday's got some good games, obviously. But, man, this year Saturday has produced so many freaking games. And, you know, obviously you put them on paper and then you find out what happens. But Texas Tech against Kansas, yeah, it's in Lawrence, Kansas, in the Allen Fieldhouse, but we know what Texas Tech is about lately. I mean, they're not afraid of anyone, and I'd say a lot of people are like, I don't really want to face that squad right now. They're hungry. They're looking to still get in, this, that, and the other. Louisville and Miami. I mean, if that's not an important game in the ACC, I don't know what is. Oh, wait, one later is very important as well. Oklahoma and Texas in Austin. Big, big game. Finally, we could talk about a Pac-12 game with a little bit more meaning. Utah and Arizona, 22-9 going head-to-head. That's kind of an interesting matchup, too. Purdue and Maryland, another big game. Right back at you. And then, obviously, the nightcap, Virginia and North Carolina, and that's a must-win to an extent for North Carolina, definitely 100% for in fact, I'd be willing to say even if they beat North Carolina and end up not winning the ACC title, North Carolina just won out, you know, and kept that cushion, I would still, and as long as Virginia won out, I would still put them at a one seed just because of the quality of wins they would have had, Marshall, at that time. But let's break in to some of these games. Why don't we start right there? North Carolina on the road in Charlottesville, Virginia. How do you feel? You think that the fact that you guys kind of got the mojo going, you think that you're going to be able to get this done here?
I guess from a Carolina perspective, I don't think they have the offense to shut us down, or I don't think their offense can keep up with us. Now, clearly they're gifted defensively, but I really don't know if there's a front court that can keep our bigs from crashing the boards. So I do like this matchup because when we are moving the ball well, we find ways to score. We just crash people down low and we occasionally hit threes. Against Miami, that was kind of an absurdity, which was awesome. But overall, I just don't think that if we go basket for basket with them, then they can really contend with us. Now, clearly, you know, they'll probably take advantage of some of our defensive lapses, but they don't have the pieces that a lot of teams do offensively in the ACC. So I like the matchup just because I don't think if they're going to hold us under, like, 65 points or something to that extent. I think that if we get that score, like, even in, like, the low mid-70s and even 80, which we normally average, I don't think that they can keep up with us scoring, even though it's on the road. I like our chances to win this game on Saturday, Chris.
It'll be a really interesting matchup. I'm looking forward to it. And we've seen in some of these bounce-back situations that, you know, a team has responded. So I look for them to respond in the game and make it a very tight game. I think it'll be a really, hopefully, a well-played game, obviously, when you're, you know, sitting at home. Louisville and Miami. This one's in Coral Gables, so they're at home again. In Miami, man, they have had quite a stretch here in the last couple of weeks, especially the last three games. Now they have to go against Louisville this weekend. What's your gut telling me here? I mean, for me, Miami obviously still has a lot at stake in this game, but Louisville, they've been playing pretty damn good themselves, and I'm actually going to go, I'm not going to say out on the limb because it's 11 against 12, so clearly anything can happen. Like I mentioned, it is at Miami, but I'm going to say Louisville is going to keep this good play going and pull, I don't even call it an upset just because it's on the road, but I'm gonna go out on the limb minorly and pick Louisville to keep that mojo going that they've kind of created since some of the bad news has come down.
I think that obviously they haven't played inspired basketball, but I think that these are two very great examples of teams that truly do cherish their home court. I think Miami's lost one conference game at home this year, maybe. They haven't lost at home this year at all in conference. So I do not see that changing, Chris. They're talking about style, but I remember watching them play a little, I think it was against Duke, so it's been a while back. But the impressive home record they've had under Larrañaga. And, yeah, like I said, they're undefeated in conference at home this year, and I don't think that changes. I mean, Louisville, too, it's rare to beat a team in that place. So I think that's just kind of the home effect we talked about all year. I think that kicks in on this game, and I think that that's too much for Louisville to overcome.
Several other games that I mentioned, the rematch, Texas and Oklahoma, number 3 against number 12. And by the way, the switchboard is back up. You have 8 minutes left of the live stream. We're not going to go much past that. But 818, if you want to call back, feel free. Otherwise, call back next week. We'll be back next Tuesday. Oklahoma, Texas. Now, you know, Texas played a very tight game with them already. Very, very tight game. Had a chance to win that game. No shame in losing 63-60. Both these teams, you look at their last five games, and they're 2-3. They're 2-3. So really, anything can truly happen in this one. Both teams have won or lost kind of close games. I would definitely say, you know, that fits more under Oklahoma, but I'd say both of them, really, when push comes to shove. Like you mentioned, that Baylor game just kind of got away from them. But even, you know, when you look at the score, it's still actually respectable for where it was.
True.
What's your feeling on this one? Can Texas, it is in Austin, we talk about this all the time, can they kind of keep that thing going? And like you said, they are in that range of 3 or 4 spots, and this would be obviously a big, big win to get Oklahoma. Now, this is huge for them too, because here we are. They're not going to win the conference more than likely, and I say more than likely very loosely, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case because of the Kansas losses, the 2 losses to them. So that I think that pretty much all but cancels them out. But number 1 seed is definitely still right there, because, hey, what do you know? Oklahoma has a win over Villanova as well. And that win, it's actually, I think it was, like I mentioned, at least 15, 20 points. That'll help them come March Madness and figuring out, you know, where to put all the teams. Can the Sooners go into Austin and get this thing done, man? What's your gut telling you here?
I'm probably a little biased just because I've truly enjoyed cheering for Texas this year in Shaka Smart. I have obviously enjoyed watching OU too. So my heart tells me I think Texas is going to win. Obviously, if you look at the matchup and the way they played earlier this year, like you said, it was a close game. If that Isaiah Taylor call goes as a free pass or a block, you know, who knows who wins that game, and then Buddy hit the big 3. I don't see why this team would be any different for not come down to the wire. If Texas has their 3-point ball going decently, which they had against OU the first game, I think they can win. If Texas, you know, has 3-ball problems come back like they were against Baylor, they're going to have a big issue. I've also noticed that the Texas, you know, they've had that Prince Ibe play center. They also got a guy named Shaquille who has played the last couple of games. He's another big man down low. So if they get Ridley back, they have 3 centers who are all a bunch of horses. That could be kind of scary, Chris. I know you obviously can't play 3 bigs at once. They're, like, really big. They're not, like, kind of like the more, you know, skin, you know, thin, like, kind of athletic guys like Purdue. But to have 3 big bigs down low to rotate, that can cause a problem to a lot of teams. So I just think with the matchup of how close it was game 1 and both teams still playing pretty well, I guess I'll just favor Texas being the home team. And I still kind of want to see if OU can put together another good game. You know, they did come back and beat West Virginia. I said that could have been a matchup style that favors them, as we've had all year in the Big 12. It kind of seems who you play on what day and how your style matches up against them. So I'll be a little more convinced that Oklahoma's back on track if they can beat Texas. But I'm going to pick Texas for the win, being at home. And I want to see if OU can really get back to their clicking style, or if that West Virginia game was a game that, you know, was good, but, you know, they're going to come back and lose to Texas. You're going to be like, huh, you know, are we back to just the buddy show and how much more do they have left in the tank kind of deal? So I think it'll be an interesting matchup. I'm taking UT.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Taylor can keep it going. Isaiah Taylor, he had a beautiful off-the-glass shot late in the game to seal their victory. But, yeah, it's interesting. I think that when I'd agree with you in your breakdown of Oklahoma. I think that I would go all – it would convince me all the way rather than it would convince me a little more if they were to get this done. And just to be on the opposite side, I'm going to go for it. I think, like you said, though, I think there's really no reason why this shouldn't be a tight, tight game. And just to kind of combo some stuff up, I think Purdue will end up getting it done at home against Maryland. And I think the home team in Utah will beat Arizona as well. The Pac-12, who the frick knows? But if you look at bubble teams, they don't have as many teams in there as much as they did. Or not at the bubble. Maybe there are more teams at the bubble now than it was a couple weeks ago when, you know, they had six and seven teams in. So I'm going to go with the home teams there. I think Purdue will they've been knocking on the door. I think they'll – I'm not going to say kick it in, per se, like they're going to handle them, but I think that the home teams will take care of business in Utah and Purdue, Marshall.
Yeah, you know, I've watched Utah a couple of times, and one thing that kind of scares me about them is that they rely completely on, like, their center. His last name is a little tricky to pronounce, and I'm drawing a blank, and I apologize, but they literally run their offense through their one center, who's good. He was one of the top 20 Wooden finalists that they portrayed end of the year for, like, potential people to win the Best Player of the Year award. But I just haven't been that impressed. And, I mean, they're one of the few teams I have seen play more than three or four times. So I'd be a little scared about picking Utah because if their center has an off night, it seems like I don't think they have a good chance to win. But we'll see. And I think for Purdue, that'd be a nice confidence booster. Obviously, you know, like, well, we already talked about them. They don't get blown out much. They got the bigs. They got the pieces. But their resume isn't as sexy as you probably want it to be. Or if you're a Purdue fan thinking, God, look at the guys we got. But do we have a lot of great wins? Not really. Maryland at home would be a nice win. And this is a Purdue team that was up three at Maryland at half a month ago. Actually, not even a month ago, 3 weeks ago. And then they let it slip in the last few minutes. And a lot of times in college basketball, just being at home can kind of give you that extra urge to kind of kick it up a notch and finish down the stretch with the home crowd behind you. So I would like a Purdue win, too. That'd be a nice little resume and confidence booster, I believe, for that team, Chris.
Yeah, and, you know, after a while, we're going to – if they don't do it after a while, we're going to have to not say they got the pieces. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
Maybe they don't.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just both fooled by what we see on the court because at some point –
true.
A sneaky one, Xavier and Seton Hall on Sunday. I guess you could throw Penn State, Michigan State sneaky because of what Penn State did to Iowa, but I wouldn't think that the – I think Michigan State would have their guard fully up – covering their face and even some of their hips for the body blow. So I'm assuming that they'd be okay there. Another one that stands out before our next show, Kansas at Texas on Big Monday. That's how that'll be the last game before our next show. Kansas at Texas. Nice Big Monday in the Big 12. You got any other things that you want to talk about before we get out of here, my friend?
Well, God, I was just thinking, if you're Texas, if you beat OU and Kansas within a two-day stretch,
man.
that resume talk and that C you're looking at, I mean, holy shit, that could be maybe one, whoa. And we'll see what shock has got. I'm not saying that's an easy task, and it isn't. But if you could beat those top dogs back-to-back, that would be a hell of a way to trickle into March, buddy. I was just going to say, it's just kind of funny. I've been
I would
reading
say
the
that'd be a full-on flood from the Bible. It wouldn't be a trickle. That would be a flood into the freaking, you know what I'm saying? I think the seas will split and everything, all that. The boat, you'll have to build a boat for Texas. Let's put it that way.
The Trojan horse will roll into town, and all the soldiers will fall at the bottom, and they'll get, you know, get sacked. the one thing that's just kind of teasing me, I've been checking bracketology just because, you know, Lenardi does a pretty good job. I think he normally only misses about two teams a year. And now clearly where you send teams for a city is a complete crapshoot. Because every year I go to a city and we normally do a show from a city. This year I go to Denver. I'm hoping the weather's nice. I won't be spoiled like San Diego a couple years ago where I was sitting outside of the San Diego Padres left field in like a sand pit and doing a show. That was pretty badass. Hopefully we don't get snow in Denver. But long-winded story anyways is they keep showing the last couple of weeks that Duke is going to Denver. And the anticipation, Chris, of how much I would enjoy to cheer against Duke is I don't think there's a word in the dictionary that could describe it. Because I normally,
especially the first weekend too, you know, the fact that they to get knocked out for the first weekend and to be able to witness that's true.
I've been on the trip 5 years now, and the first year I went to all the games, and from that point on, I'm kind of like, you know what? I'd rather hang out at a bar because Carolina always plays when we have a game going on in our city. And so I didn't even buy tickets this year, but then they're reasonable to buy anyways. But so I've normally been kind of I'll be downtown and meet up with our group after the games kind of person. But if, and I'm going to keep praying, if Duke is in town, oh boy, the enjoyment I will have for that will be, it'll be a moment I've never quite experienced. I've been to a lot of great sport moments in my life. That would definitely be one of the top ones. And if by chance enough that were to occur, I think we'd have to do a live college ball show as I walk out the stadium chanting like Duke sucks or something. I'm praying for it. I know it's just a huge like tease or a troll, as they say nowadays in the Twitter world. But please, God, let me see Duke in person and see them lose. And I don't need a Christmas this year. I mean, I'll buy my family presents. But I don't need anyone because that'd be good enough. So, and I know you know the passion I have for this and how enjoyable that'd be. So I'm hoping that Lenardi's dead on and that Duke is going to Denver and I will get to witness a meltdown. And that would just make my year, my friend. That would make my frickin' year.
That would be pretty funny. That would be pretty funny. Although, well, it'd be A&M more than likely, as far as how they have it set up here. But who knows? Not more than likely, just in general off of this. Like you said, it's more about getting them in than showing exactly where they go. But that would be pretty funny, man. That would be really funny.
Oh, God.
Well, either way, enjoy the games this weekend, buddy. You have yourself a good weekend, man.
Yeah, Chris and I will be back next week. And for that caller that called in, do it again. I know we had some the radio gods weren't on our side today, but it is also fun to debate. For all we know, maybe that was a Duke fan calling in and wanted to give me some crap. So, you know, whatever works. Enjoy your weekend. Have a good night. Take care. Peace.